very much. It is truly my pleasure, everyone. And since we have such a very tight schedule, and I was given the simple job of just tracing the whole history of the field, that
time's up.
Good. It saves me a lot of trouble. So this is going to be really much more to get discussion going rather than all the data that one might need. I'm told that I have to show this slide to show that I don't have any, unfortunately, I have no relationships with anything that bring any money. Excuse me, I've been doing a lot of traveling. No, I'm all right. Thanks. Sort of a reminder, since most of this is really our relationship with domestic animals, we started actually, you know, really domesticating animals a long time ago. And it's a whole new separate field. We started the dogs, actually the very first one. Then there's a long period of some of our food animals. Then some of our animals that we used to move us around and to move things around. And even more recently, animals that were used for food, for even for research. The animal which we most studied when we're talking about human-animal bond, of course, is our relationship with dogs, which really starts a long time ago. And I just to mention that this that actually ever since people started living in villages, we started shaping dogs. Obviously, as far as 12,000 years ago, they were a part of our culture, and even the breeds that we would talk about go way back. So it's a long relationship that we have with at least that one animal. If our relationship with animals is important, it should be pervasive, and it definitely is. This is just marketing data, because there is no official data on animal populations, but as you can see, more than half of all U.S. households, at least, have companion animals within them. And as you can see, you know, dogs, cats are the most common. And even this number doesn't even reflect the fact that almost half of all animal-owning households have more than one animal. So we're talking about a lot of animal contact. If you ask people, and I just chose the dog because we don't have much time to chat, why they even have a pet, and the American Pet Product Manufacturers surveys are really quite good and quite extensive. People self-report that their relationship with animals involves companionship. More recently, there's the self-report that they honestly feel animals are good for their health, that they're members of the family, they're good for child development. And actually, in the last 2 years, they even report that it's involved in walking and jogging, in other words, facilitating exercise. Our relationship with animals, especially our pet animals, has not always been that perceived that positively. Much, of course, the history of veterinary medicine and animal science is actually the problems animals cause from people. This is, you know, WHO in their fascination, you know, a lot of work on our relationship that animals cause problems. Such as, you know, the studies and, of course, zoonoses, which is really where much of the came from. But just sort of while this is going on, there always was this sort of belief that animals play different kinds of roles. You know, in the 1916, this is taken from the Bureau of Mines, birds and mice may be used to detect carbon monoxide in the mines. So it was an awareness that animals were at least used as sentinels for the quality of our environment. And of course, now you know where the expression canary in the mine shaft comes from. It literally comes from this brochure. So we were sort of aware of that. Interesting enough, that was 1916. This is 1995. In the sarin gas release in Tokyo subway system, and they're still using canaries. And there really is an appreciation of animals as environmental sentinels. Despite the incredible pervasiveness, official interest in animals and health really started much later, though the unofficial interest was always there. This is a 1916 advertisement for Kellogg's Flakes. And even then, and the tagline is, send your child out to a good, healthy breakfast, and they're already tying the idea of child, health, and animals together. A much more modern advertisement for an antibiotic for inner ear infection. Again, there's the poor child resting in front of the fireplace, but just to make sure that the drug works, there's a little dose of puppy. So we've always had that perception. But the truth of the matter is, the first real published evidence in a peer-reviewed medical journal doesn't come until about 1980, 1981, when, and this is about when I get into this business, Erica Friedman and Aaron Katcher and so on, were following, in this case, a very small study, and it's been followed up since, 92 people who were hospitalized after a heart attack to see. Are you having trouble hearing me? No. Okay. All right. Hospitalized after a heart attack, and to measure 1 year survival, because if you survive that first year, you're almost in the same risk factor as anyone else. It's a common measure. And interestingly enough, obviously, social support and how serious the heart attack was the most important. But we have a 1 year survivorship separation even just by having an animal. So we have a 94% survival rate compared to 72%. And even if you take dogs out of the sample and just look at other animals, you have an increased survivorship just from ownership. There's absolutely no... this is not even looking at the nature of the relationship and so on. So there's just something in our relationship that actually changed, it was a risk factor in itself. And it weirdly wasn't, and then in by 1987, the data is almost strong enough that the National Institutes of Health held their workshop that finally recognizes that there are health benefits to our relationship with animals. And in fact, the take-home message from NIH is that all future studies of human health should consider the presence or absence of a pet in the home and perhaps the nature of this relationship, and that no future study of human health should be considered as comprehensive if the animals for which they share their lives are not included. Remember, there are none of the old-time studies, Framingham, and none of the old studies ever included animal ownership. So, which would be something important to do, whether animals have some negative health implications or positive health implications. Animals were so pervasive, they were ignored. But now we're sort of beginning to start looking at this as an issue. I thought it was kind of interesting that AARP, one of the great observers of human health, did an article last year, and you know, identifying what are the health, how to stay healthy, you know, and that you should be, you know, happy and eat right and rest, but they include animal ownership as one of the, you know, the six major things you can do to improve your health. In the short time we have here, I just want to raise the issue of why this might happen, because that's the whole history. But one of the real uphill fights that the field has had is a good idea of why this relationship should even happen. Because I think people are appropriately cautious if the cause and effect relationship is not obvious, or at least, you know, identified in any way. And there actually are many things happening at the same time. One area that has been sort of identified since the early 1980s is the biophilia hypothesis. That is E.O. Wilson's observation that as animals, we are innately attracted to animals, to nature in general, that we seek out nature, we find comfort in our relationship with nature. And there are all kinds of examples from, you know, why you vacation and so on. I'm using a zoo visit as a sort of a model here, because the truth is more people go to zoos every year than all spectator sports combined. And it's not because everybody wants to be a veterinarian or bird watcher or a biologist. In fact, animal people tend to use zoos a little bit less. It's that we find comfort in around nature, and zoos, of course, are a real concentrated dose of nature. The other major theory that we've been working on is social support theory. That has been well recognized in human-human relationships, that our people in the company of other people actually do better, are healthier, seek it out. And it's not surprising, as the big social primate that we are. And if you start looking at what people do with each other and how they interact, it sort of explains why it's important. And much of our last 10 years or before was looking at are some of these same behaviors and belief systems also found in our relationship with with animals. For instance, people report that loneliness is a real killer of people, and obviously why we need other people to mitigate against loneliness. Well, if you do interview studies and so on, you find that people, one of the most common self-report is people feel less lonely, more secure in the presence of animals. I'm using some pictures here because we have time for real data, from a photo contest, which really is data in a way because they're showing how people perceive their relationship with animals. And, you know, going fishing is sort of a classic metaphor of wanting to be alone for a little bit, you know, getting away from people. Animals will let you be alone without being lonely. And that's probably one of the major roles that they're playing in our lives. And, you know, sort of classic photo contest, you know, there's probably nothing more lonely than dying of AIDS, and yet we're beginning to recognize that this is one way of dealing with this loneliness in a positive way, and it helps, even though there are reasons you would think you would not have animal contact. One of the reasons that people benefit from each other is we talk to each other. A way of thinking out loud, a way of sort of conceptualizing and mobilizing your ideas. Well, people talk to animals. In one of our studies and other studies, about 97% of people talk to their dogs, with the other 3% lying. Everybody talks to their dogs. And not only do you talk to your dog, you talk to your dog as if the animal understands, not the words necessarily, but the feelings. So therefore, it is a true relationship. By the way, younger people talk, really? Okay. Well, one of the things that we found out is that when you talk to people, they talk to their animals as a relaxation effect. And now people are sort of kidding around that, sure enough, there is a true relaxation effect. And this perception that not only animals are good for your stress, but now there's real data that it's good for the animal, too. And again, if we could talk more, if you're interested in it, it's to raise these issues. We know touch is very important. And sure enough, people interact with many of their dogs, cats, ferrets, and smaller birds in this kind of touch way. It's probably one of the reasons animals are so popular as visiting animals for people who are somewhat socially isolated. And it's particularly important for for men. We've shown that this orientation and care of wanting an animal is true, whether it be rural or urban, and it's true for the backgrounds of all young people. Animals are very important, especially for young boys, where that's the only time they have the opportunity to be rewarded for being a nurturer. And animals are very important in our focus of attention. The earliest observations of human activities show that people were fascinated by animals. And there are all kinds of studies that show that we orient and find great comfort in looking at animals. Animals stimulate exercise. It's a great social facilitator. This is just, again, from that collection. I have no idea which way the water is going, but it just shows that this happens. And there's this real growing interest, as we'll talk a little bit more today, on use of animals as stimulating exercise. Dog parks are really exercise for both the dogs and the people. Laughter is very important for people. It's one of the ways we relate and find comfort. Animals facilitate laughter because they bring the story without any gender, race, or age. You could just have fun with it. So he's talking to his dog, but he can't be much smaller than his dog because they're both talking. And of course, you know, never think outside the box. And we just find great humor in how we relate to animals. And of course, animals are great social facilitators. And all kinds of studies have shown that people in the perception in company of animals are perceived to be more positive and more approachable. And it's really one of the many ways animals play a service role because of this social facilitation. And in fact, the study, anytime an American politician gets in trouble, they're paired off with dogs because of that modeling. And so if social facilitation is important to each other, it explains that when since animals are perceived as members of the family, the health effects are not surprising, but totally predictable. And now we better both fine-tune how we do better appreciate our relationship with both companion animals and nature in general, and then even how to fine-tune it to be used in very special needs when it's needed. And that's to tell me it's the end. Thank you.